You are listening to CKMS News on 102.7 FM, Radio Waterloo. I am Dan Keller, and this show first aired April 22, 2024. The April 15th Council meeting of the City of Waterloo featured the Senior Policy Planner for Growth Management, Michelle Lee, presenting on the city's Housing Accelerator Program, including potential add-on effects from the recent federal budget and other newly announced programs from the provincial and regional governments. While funding for the project was approved in principle by the federal government last year, the city had to first send their plan to the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation for approval. With the CMHC's recent green lighting for all 8 points in the city's plan, the money will start to flow and the work can begin. This program could not come at a better time for Waterloo, as data from the CMHC shows that housing construction has been stagnating in the city. So far in 2024, only 18 new units have been started in Waterloo, and a total of 477 new builds have been started across the region, representing the fewest housing starts at this time of year since 2019. According to the city's webpage, the project will accelerate new building construction while increasing the supply of housing, addressing parking requirements, expanding the missing middle housing near transit and schools, streamline the development approvals and building permit process, and, quote, support long-lasting systemic changes, unquote. In this show, we hear Michelle Lee's presentation to council and answers to questions posed by Rowe, Bodily, Vasek, Wright, and Mayor McCabe, who asked about the plan and how the programs would be implemented. For more information on the housing plan, check out engagewr.ca/WaterlooHAFActions. Here is Michelle Lee's presentation to City Council.
Housing Accelerator Fund, the main purpose of that fund was to encourage projects led by local municipalities that were going to help increase market and non-market housing supply and to bring housing online more quickly. So we brought forward 8 initiatives to CMHC for their review, and they approved all of them. We have a municipal lands program that is going to be looking at how we can streamline specific municipally owned lands that we don't need for other purposes and bring them online for possible residential development. We're looking at employment land conversions, specifically with respect to employment lands that the Region of Waterloo has already removed from regionally significant employment lands, and looking to see how those areas can be developed as mixed-use developments. We're looking at corridor expansion study and plan, which involves up-designating some areas that might allow for more missing middle housing along areas that are well-supported by transit. We're looking at an online development application and submission process that is going to streamline and modernize our development approvals. Number 5 is a multi-unit residential acquisition program that is going to be providing financial incentives to not-for-profits and co-ops to help them purchase affordable rental units in the community before they get purchased or lost through rent eviction. We are bringing forward an additional residential unit toolkit and financial incentives to make it easier and more affordable for homeowners to add additional residential units to their properties. We are bringing forward a community planning permit system, which is going to be piloted in a small area of the city, which is going to make drastic changes to the planning and development approvals system, where review and approvals will occur in a much more compressed time frame. And then lastly, we are bringing forward a program to take another look at our parking framework across the city and look for areas where we can reduce parking to ensure that we're making efficient use of land and reducing costs for builders so that they can redirect those savings towards making units more affordable.
After the presentation, Mayor McCabe thanked Michelle Lee, then the question started. Councillor Rowe began with a question about the multi-unit residential acquisition program, and Michelle Lee responded.
I do have a couple of questions about number 5 and number 7. For number 5, the multi-unit residential acquisition program, can you just explain that a little bit, what that would look like?
The multi-unit residential acquisition program, actually, we borrowed the name from a similar program that's already operating in Toronto. They have found it to be quite effective. What they do is they offer loans and I believe grants as well, or maybe they're forgivable loans that not-for-profits and cooperatives apply for in advance. And then once they are approved to receive one of these loans or grants, they can then go shopping in the market with that funding to assist in their purchase of an existing rental building that is already providing affordable rents. The idea behind this is that existing rental buildings are being lost through sales to REITs and other sort of profit-seeking developers, and as a result, people are being evicted from their homes. So being able to transfer the ownership of these developments into the hands of not-for-profits or community-minded co-ops is really a really affordable way to prevent rent evictions and displacement. So we don't know exactly what the program is going to look like, but recognizing that Toronto's program has been quite effective, we're probably looking at loans and grants to incentivize the purchase of these types of buildings.
Preventing rent evictions, that's really important to me, and I'm sure other members of council as well, and staff.
Roe followed up with a question about existing examples of municipalities using the pilot planning permit system, which Lee responds that some smaller cottage country communities had started using the planning tool, as had Ottawa regarding a non-residential area, but this would be, quote, fairly new territory, unquote, as Waterloo would be one of the first municipalities to use the tool on, quote, more built-up, complex development areas, unquote. Councillor Baudelet's first question clarified disposition and leasing versus selling municipal lands under these plans. Michelle Lee responds.
My understanding is that term does also include lease. Julie's nodding, so I'm thankful that I'm on the right track there. We're looking at all options, and the idea would be what is the best option where we can retain permanent affordable housing, or at least affordable housing that is as long-lasting as we possibly can make it, while still ensuring that a development would be viable. So there is some give and take there. And, you know, obviously, if you retain the land, you're not giving that value away, but maybe there are other measures we can use to make a viable development. So we're definitely going to be exploring all those options.
Baudelet then spoke about parking minimums and the responsibility of the city's government to make sure what is built reflects the goals that the city has set. Staff member Ron Ormson responded.
My understanding is that through the HAF 2.0 and also through recently provided Bill 185 from the province, it actually contemplates completely eliminating parking minimums in MTSAs. And I just want to make a note that it's pretty rare on the housing file of late that both the federal and the provincial government agree on something. So that was interesting from my perspective to note. And I want to highlight that as a municipality, our planning department, we have a role in regulating what we want to see for the built form in our community. And in many ways, I think this is an acknowledgement that the private sector and the municipality may have convergent goals, and this is a way for us to secure the things that we want to see for our community. So in practice, that looks like demanding a certain standard of urban design through our urban design guidelines, requiring a certain amount of amenity space, and in the future, I hope will include requiring a certain number of affordable housing units through inclusionary zoning, perhaps a certain level of sustainability standards through green development standards, along with countless other examples of regulations. And personally, I guess I'm struggling with whether mandating a certain amount of parking spaces is still congruent with the goals of our community. And I do appreciate that if insufficient parking is provided on the development, it could potentially have a spillover effect for on-street parking. Now the question part. I have a two-part question. The first part is, knowing that other municipalities such as the City of Edmonton have eliminated parking minimums across the entire city, is that something that we will be exploring? And the second part is there going to be an opportunity as well through that OP process to potentially review the loosening of our parking restrictions more broadly across the community, including on-street parking?
With respect to eliminating parking in station areas, Bill 185, as Joel has done some early research on, seems to us to eliminate parking minimums in what is called protected station areas. So that's to say the larger type transit hubs, if you will, that are in the GTA. So where you would have the TTC, Metrolinx, and regional transit authorities all, you know, linking up in one location to provide a really robust transit option that would not involve the automobile. To answer your question directly, and as Michelle said, we are looking at that in the official plan. My own opinion is to get to zero would be difficult because that would also require cooperation from the private sector. And if we talk to most developers who are selling condos, for instance, they've indicated it's very difficult to sell a unit without a parking space, or at least some reduction in the one-to-one ratio of parking spaces. So we will definitely explore that because I think that's a good goal. The second one, to answer your question about loosing parking restrictions citywide, that is something that we'll explore in partnership with Mark's team in municipal enforcement and community services. The city's transportation master plan has over 75 references to parking, and it actually informs official plan policy as well, with the goal of trying to, you know, improve that modal shift and get people out of cars, provide alternatives to cars, but also to recognize that there are places with the new planning regime that we have that allows more units on traditional lots that we have to look at giving people options for parking on street locations where it makes sense and to avoid neighbor-to-neighbor conflict.
Next, Councillor Vasek asked about this program taking on the idea of building housing over city-owned parking lots, and Michelle Lee answers that she thinks this new program would take on such investigations, so a separate investigation would not need to be launched. Vasek then asked if the residential toolkit would include homeowners and developers, and Lee answered that the toolkit is primarily focused on homeowners to, quote, try to bridge the gap, unquote, to make additional units more affordable. Councillor Wright then asked about the missing middle and what it means for getting projects underway. Lee answers after the question.
What zoning envelope would be considered in our official plan process as we go forward to support missing middle? Like, is that an RMU 20? Like, what is it?
That's loose language on my part. It also gives us a little bit of flexibility to decide what makes sense for the given area. Missing middle is generally defined as compact housing that's more dense than a single detached home and probably less dense than a six-story apartment building, like six stories or less. That's generally how I use it as well. It could mean that, depending on the location that's decided, it could mean that we're looking at something similar to Northdale, where it's mostly six-story buildings. It could be in some cases we have corridors where we're looking at maybe four to six stories, so that could be stacked townhouses all the way up to six-story apartment buildings. So that's generally the sense of what we were thinking when we wrote the initiative. But again, the devil's in the details, and that will be the responsibility of our planning staff to decide where is it located and what built form makes sense for the area given the specific constraints.
Councillor Wright then asked about the community planning permit system and if it streamlines the building process. Michelle Lee and Joel Aron had answers there.
Really, what the community planning permit system is about is a mixing of zoning and site planning together into one process. So you take the two, you formulate a more detailed zoning bylaw that's integrating urban design elements into it that can move towards a building permit very quickly. And so it really is premised on time is money, right? And us advancing through the process. So as Michelle indicated, we're looking at a pilot area to begin with and then looking at options to expand from there.
Finally, Mayor McCabe asked how the newly announced plans from the federal government will build on the city's ongoing work and immediate plans. Michelle responds.
There are a few really promising items in the federal announcement, and they have released a housing plan that is actually sort of the base point for all these little announcements that they're making. You can find them all in this housing plan. And a few of them seem to overlap with some of the things we're hoping to do. Not necessarily overlap in terms of being redundant, but rather maybe will help us bring forward those initiatives easier because they are providing either additional financial support or they are making things easier from the federal lens. It makes our lives easier. So a few of them are, and I've only identified three because there are a lot of details yet to be determined. It's very general at this stage. They have something called a public lands for homes plan. The plan hasn't been written yet, but I believe it's coming out. And the idea is that are going to be supports for using public lands, and it includes municipal lands for housing. They seem to suggest that there would be some mapping and inventory work, which we don't really need. We have our own, we know where our lands are. But there was a possible suggestion of other resources available. So what exactly that looks like remains to be seen, but there may be some stacking of opportunities there. A second one is, I mentioned already, the additional residential units, low-cost financing available to homeowners. So that can then be added on to our toolkit and any grants or other financial incentives that we create to support homeowners. And then they have something called a rental protection fund, which sounds a whole lot like our number five, multi-unit residential acquisition program. So I believe one of the things that they're proposing to do is to broaden the grants and financing available to not-for-profits and co-ops to allow them to be able to compete in the market for affordable rental buildings. One of the challenges that they face is the timing of the available money. So they can often get the grants, but only long after the building has been already sold in the market. So I believe the federal government has heard the call for more funding, but also the timing of that funding to be upfront so that not-for-profits can go and take those funds and compete in the market. So those are three initiatives that are coming forward that look very promising in terms of our ability to make more meaningful impact with our initiatives.
You have been listening to audio from the April 15th Council meeting of the City of Waterloo. City staff person Michelle Lee, who presented and answered questions on the City's Housing Accelerator program, including about the potential add-on effects from the recent federal budget. For more information on the housing plan, check out engagewr.ca/Waterloo HAF Actions. This is Dan Keller for CKMS News on 102.7 FM, Radio Waterloo. Thank you for tuning in. This program is part of the Local Journalism Initiative and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, Heritage Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom. Check out the archived versions of this program on radiowaterloo.ca/news and listen to all the LJI content at frequencynews.ca. If you want to get in touch with comments or ideas about stories to cover, email us at news@radiowaterloo.ca.